Power on. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Shall we start? And before we start, shall we all turn out? I'll listen to the recordings. It's not nice listening to your own voice, but I think if we all put our microphones on, and I'll perhaps hear it a bit clearer. So I suggest you put them all on now, and we can hear all your chit chat as well. But that'll be good. So we'll start the meeting now. So first of all, welcome to all this Scrutiny Climate Change and Environment Committee meeting on Thursday, 11th of January 2024. I notice that in place of Councillor Jones, we've got Councillor Allen. So welcome, Councillor Allen. Thank you. I'm sorry Jackie Jones is not here, but thank you for coming. I hope you enjoy the meetings. For the tape, shall we start off with just some very brief introductions? I think we're supposed to do councillors first. So I'll start. So Michael Slater, Chair, Climate Change and Environment Scrutiny Committee Chair. Going that way, please. Thank you.
Councillor Gould.
Thank you.
Councillor Ashcroft.
Councillor Allen.
Paul Speed, Open Spaces. I'm responsible for horticulture.
Okay, thank you.
Pretty excellent. Michael Holmes, Community Open Spaces and Facilities.
Thank you. Thank you. Welcome. Thank you.
Councillor Kim Smith.
Thank you.
Councillor Monica Holter.
Thank you. Good evening, Lance. Thank you for coming. Thank you.
And I'm James Abbott. I'm the Corporate and Commercial Manager.
Thank you. Why not?
Andrea Davis, Principal Democratic Services Officer.
Right, okay. So, item one, have we got any apologies? There's none we know, is there?
Thank you, Chair. No, we haven't received any apologies.
No, okay. Item two, declarations of interest, if any. Do any councillors have any declarations of interest to declare on the items under agenda, under discussion at this evening's meeting? There you go. No? Good. Item three, have we got any urgent business? I'm not aware of any urgent business for the consideration at the meeting. Is that correct? Yep. Lovely. Item four, questions from the public. We have not received any questions from members of the public in advance of the meeting. Yep. Item five, questions from members of the committee. We have not received any questions from members of the committee in advance of the meeting. Yep. Okay. Carrying along. Item six, public minutes of previous meeting on 20th September. I propose the approval of the public minutes from the previous meeting. Do I have a seconder, please? Thank you. Thank you, Councillor Gould. Thank you. We will now go to the vote. All those for the motion. Thank you. The minutes of the last meeting. Okay. Thank you. Are there any against? Thank you. Are there any abstentions? Okay, so the vote is carried then. Thank you. Item seven, tree planting within the borough. I now invite the community's open spaces and facilities manager and the project officer present to give a presentation on tree planting. Thank you for coming, gentlemen. Thank you very much. I'll just interrupt. Councillor Huckabee has just arrived. Thank you. Thank you. It's okay. Thank you. Councillor Huckabee has just arrived. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just a short presentation, just so you can have an understanding of how we deliver in tree planting. You got the controls at all? So if you just move on then, James, to the next slide, please. So I just thought I'd set out there the story so far in terms of where we are with tree planting. That looks back at the last 3 years. And the figures that you can see there, that we've divided them up between WIPs and standards. Just for those that may not know, WIPs are the very, very small trees that are planted. As you can see, in 2021, we planted over 2,000. And again, from the table, there's also a change of tactics with the approach, because the attrition rates for the loss of WIPs and numbers that are lost because of damage, vandalism, and all kinds of different things, but incredibly high. So it was a change of approach where we've actually focused on good quality standards rather than WIPs. So across those years, you can see we're averaging around about 200 trees a year. The species that we've planted are varied. The trees that we planted try to be native species and mixed throughout. Those are the trees that we planted. Next slide, please, James. So we're 3 years in, and as these years are developing and going by, we're constantly learning about our tree planting and what's being delivered across the borough. And as I said earlier, that survival rate to tree is incredibly low. They tend to get vandalised, etc. and so forth. One of the other things is it's not a numbers game. The two gentlemen either side of me will talk about the importance of not just planting trees for the sake of planting trees. They need to be the right trees in the right place. And sometimes trees aren't the best solution for our carbon capture or indeed nature recovery. So there'll be other solutions other than planting trees. Volunteers, we've used volunteers in various areas where we've done tree planting. Other than the trees themselves being planted, there's health benefits for people, reducing social isolation and improving the local environment. So there's indirect benefits from using volunteers, which all seems to be very positively received. I know there's some councillors sitting around this table that have been involved in tree planting, and hopefully we'll be getting you out again in the future to do tree planting. As I've already said, trees aren't the only answer, and sometimes even though the space may appear suitable, it isn't usable, so we need to think about this potential use of space. It is not necessarily a case of there's a piece of grass there, can we put tree on there. Again, might not be the right solution, it might be something else, or there might be other contextual things that we'll need to think about. Again, that's where Mark and Paul will be able to advise when we talk about any questions later. And the final point is a really important point, is that if we are looking at our carbon capture and nature recovery, the importance of our existing and established trees, incredibly important, but as I said in that bullet point there, often ignored. Next slide, please, James. So looking forward, we will continue to try and identify suitable locations. That's always going to be finite. We're not going to be able to every location plant trees or indeed help with that nature recovery. Always going to continue to encourage volunteering. And as I said, there's some real positive direct and indirect benefits from having tree planting, but also getting members of the public involved in nature recovery as well. Members will also know that we're looking to establish a tree nursery using the Go Garden and the Horticultural Centre. Basically, as simple as this, it's to grow those WIP trees on in a protected environment so that they can become standard and then planted out in the community, and we're expecting to grow those over the next 3 years. We also want to look at how we can complement existing features within the different parks and open spaces. And we try to continually change the species of trees just to reflect how the adaptations to climate change as well. As temperatures change, we may need to think about different species of trees. I've already said that our land is finite, so one of the things we will need to consider is potentially forging partnerships with other landowners to look at what they're doing in terms of that tree planting and nature recovery. And the last bullet point there could be one of the more controversial. If we are serious about climate change and nature recovery, we may well look at parks that are more wild in their appearance. Much of our aspects and the way we review parks and open spaces are very much grounded in that Victorian, neat, very tidy and orderly parks. They will naturally be a move away from that as we look at more nature recovery and involving nature and increasing more wildlife on our parks and open spaces. James. That concludes our presentation. We're quite happy to take questions. No doubt you've got lots of questions regarding tree planting and the like. So happy to take questions, Chair.
Thank you. Yes, thank you for the presentation. Very, very nice. Very, very succinct. Any questions, people? Yes, Councillor Ashcroft. Thank you. Ben, sorry.
Right, so we had a presentation from the Woodland Trust the other week, and they were saying to plant whips, and they were discussing planting whips and planting standard trees. Now, I know you've always said, Paul, that planting whips is more beneficial and cost-effective for us, really. And the Woodland Trust was saying that to plant a standard tree, that's going to take more managing and more time to settle in the whip, and that would actually effectively cost more. So if we're going down that route, is it going to cost us more? Because those established trees that you're thinking of growing on are going to take far more watering and looking after because the whips will establish themselves. So is there a break-even point on that? And how much is it going to cost the council?
No, you're right.
You're absolutely right. And in the ideal world, planting whips is perfect. What the Woodland Trust don't do is work in public parks. And that's what we have to do. And the problem with public parks is they've got the public in there. And we planted, I think it was nearly 400 whips in Pennycroft Park with local school children. And within a week, almost every single whip was ripped out. And the vandalism is the main problem. And you are right about cost and cost effective. But in the long term, it kind of all balances out. And what you do with whips, it's a numbers game. So you plant 1,000 whips in the hope that you're going to get about 50 trees out of it that will eventually be mature. So there is an argument, there is a cost, but more mature trees, more standard, are less likely to be vandalised. They do take more water and they do take more effort to establish, but they actually do get away quicker, and whips are very, very vulnerable. So, yeah, there's an argument both ways, but the problem with public parks is the vandalism that we get is pretty bad.
Just following on for that, is that going to put more pressure on your team to go out and water these trees, or is someone else going to be able to have to do that? Just take that pressure off. So I know how much pressure you're under as it is.
Well, no, because it's actually contracted with ID Verde, who are the grounds maintenance contractors, and their job is to water trees once they've been planted. The trouble is, tree planting has become quite a controversial subject, hasn't it, really? And whilst everyone, including us, would like to go out and plant hundreds and hundreds of trees, as Mike said, we have a lot of factors to consider. A public park is a public park. Not only do you have the problem of vandalism there, but also we can't just turn every public park into a forest. There has to be species that are suitable for the size of the park, the location of the park, and also, and I'm sure Mark will jump in, then we have to take into account the ongoing consideration of climate change, don't we?
So from a climate change perspective, the initial consideration at the moment in terms of the tree planting is choosing which species to actually plant. The problem we've got at the moment is there's no clear national guidance about how to respond to that, because to be quite honest, people don't really know what's going to happen. And indeed, I've even been in contact with the National Forest to get some advice from them, and they didn't respond, so they haven't got a clear line. But what we want to do is predominantly plant native trees, because we're also looking for the nature recovery benefits. We'll be looking at both the combination of planting and also where possible natural regeneration. So if a particular site's got a good seed bank or their seeds quite close, a site can naturally regenerate. But in terms of the trees that we plant, we'd want a combination of local planting stock. But in addition to that, we might want to purchase some trees from further south, possibly even in Europe. So we'll get native British species, but ones that are more used to dealing with warmer, dry climates. And on top of that, we'll go for species which have got a bit more of a southerly range, like hornbeam, beech, lime. So they're all trees that will grow in Burton, but they do tend to have... We're currently at the northern edge of the distribution, and that's the sensible way to plant going forward.
Thank you. But before I bring Councillor Mickey in, can I just mention that I don't know, I sent everybody, and I think Daniel may have sent it to us as well, councillors this is, the presentation from the National Forest did to the Planning Committee. The gentleman there spoke to us, Mr. Metcalf, I can't remember his first name, sorry, and he mentioned planting non-snappable trees. So obviously the National Forest have got an idea, haven't they, about how you planted tree is going to survive in the best place from vandalism. So you know, they should be able to perhaps give us some advice. Perhaps, I don't know if you know, you can contact them.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got a name, that would be good. The people I've been in touch with at the National Forest haven't responded.
I'll check the detail and send you the name. Yeah, I might find it tonight. Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, Councillor Huckabee, please. Mick, put your microphone on, please. Everyone, put your microphones on. So I can...
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Can you? Oh, I didn't know that. Sorry. No, you can have it on. Thank you. Put it on.
The government plan set a while back were that they were looking for 200 million trees, which equated, I think, over their plan of about 20 million trees a year across the nation. They've never got above 2 million a year. So we're way, way behind what their calculations was when they prepared it. The thing about WIPs and growing trees on is every time you move them, you stunt their growth. So a full mature tree grown from a WIP is one particular size mature. If you then look at the number of moves that a WIP may have had, you will find degrees of stuntedness. So in a sense, you plant what you expect to get, right? Now, as far as growing trees is concerned, it really doesn't matter whether you grow them as WIPs in the field or out the field. What the criteria is have you got the space to do it in? Because a tree is doing its job, whether it doesn't know that it's in a parkland, it doesn't know that it's in a boggy field, it just does what it does. So the idea that we limit the amount of tree planting by not having the amount of land available is sort of like a third party suppression of our abilities. And you're right, I mean, I think that Woodland Trust and what have you are way behind the curve on understanding just exactly what the relationship of trees is to their surroundings and also to the human environment. So there is a lot of learning to do. There's new books coming on all the time that tell you about communities of trees, the way that they give to another tree that's not as healthy as it should be, and they lend things like a community of humans. Now, this is beyond our understanding. We can't conceive that these things exist, these relationships, biotic relationships or whatever. So I think it's grow trees wherever we can. You know, I spent 10 years in France. Everywhere there was a boggy piece of land, they put trees in it that they knew that would grow straight and that they could cut down and use as timber for shingles, for this, for that, the other, very cheaply. So I think, you know, it's a learning curve. We're nowhere near the final finish tape at all. Probably a couple of laps behind it even.
In fact, can I just answer what you say? I think you're absolutely right. And I think the problem is, and we've been having these discussions in our team for a long time.
Yeah.
We are going through a very transitional period, and horticulture, the environment, everything is going through a very, very new phase now. And with climate change and all the other things that are coming in, things are not going to go back to the traditional way they were.
No.
And I think what we're in a point now where, as Mark said, there aren't any obvious guidelines for this, that, or the other. So we're kind of learning as we go along.
Mm.
And I think one of the biggest problems that we face in open spaces is public perception of things. We're going through a period now for a few years where things won't ever go back, and as Mike said, parks will become very different, and it isn't just here in East Staffordshire, it's across the entire country and probably the whole world.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, we're going into unknown territory in a way.
About the Forestry Commission not responding. I mean, they admitted something like 10 years ago that they're planting plan was completely wrong because they misjudged what the climate was going to be, and they planted something like 30 million trees, which eventually will die out before maturity because the temperature will be too hot for it. So
a classic example of this, and it's a slightly different thing, but it actually is the same subject. If you look at the In Bloom competition run by the Royal Horticultural Society,
you can attend seminars and lectures from the RHS where they're telling us now we need to be more environmental, we need to change our ways, but at the same time then, when they go out each year judging entries, they knock points off because they're doing what they've suggested. So we are in, it's like all these organisations like the RHS, the Wildlife, you know, the Woodland Trust, all these people, they don't in reality know, because nobody does, what could happen. So they're kind of trying to make it up as they go along, and that's why, as Mark said, it's very unclear.
You're quite right, we don't know what's going to happen, but what we do know is what they say is going to happen, these officials, is worse than that. It's progressing far quicker than they seem to have chance to redress their reports and suggestions.
Our efforts in the open space is very simple. We'll plant as many trees as we possibly can in as many places as we can, which I think you'll agree, but we have a lot of factors to take into account, because the places that we manage, the public open spaces, there are limitations on them, because a park, as I said, has to be considered for lots of other things and not just trees. So I think one of the things that we've been looking at for the future is whether or not we can get find land that isn't ESB seed land, like school grounds, farms, all sorts of places where we can work in partnership to get a lot more trees onto these sort of places, increase the stock massively, but still manage our parks and open spaces in a sensible way.
Yeah, I'll just jump in there as well. We have had successful workings with different schools and those that are all on land anyway. So where we're talking about tree plants, and what we've been able to do is support different community projects. You've seen on the first slide, we donated some trees to a parish council, and we've also worked with a church in Bramshill Park. Tree planting on Bramshill Park. So some of those alliances are really being forged, and people recognise the benefit of trees and are quite happy to donate. And equally, if we've got spare stocks ourselves, we're quite happy to donate. So there are good examples already of that kind of partnership working, which I'll give Mark a lead in there on that. What we do as an open spaces team is we identify sites each year for potential tree planting. And there are two sites that we were originally considering, which is Stegman and Washington. So everybody will be familiar with the fact that the rugby club no longer operates on there. We can't plant trees, but that I'll let Mark explain the detail.
Yeah, just a little bit more about the site constraints, to taking it beyond what Paul and Mike have said. There are a couple of sites that we've looked at where potentially we could do some larger scale tree planting. And the first one was Oxley's Meadows, down on the water side, but unfortunately that particular site is designated as a national priority habitat. Is something called coastal and floodplain grazing marsh, which was included within a list of priority habitats in an act in 2006, the Natural Environment and Rural Communities Act. And as a local authority, you know, we have a kind of a biodiversity responsibility which has been placed on us by central government. And it would be very irresponsible of the council to actually plant trees all over what's considered to be a national priority habitat. And indeed, if we wanted to do that, we would probably have to go and speak to Natural England, who are the regulator. Natural England would then turn around to us and say, actually, you know, trees, no, not really. We want you to manage it properly as coastal and floodplain grazing marsh. So that's what we've decided we're going to do. And that's the best thing to do from a nature conservation perspective on that site. But managing it as coastal and floodplain grazing marsh will still sequester the carbon. It's not going to be as good as tree planting, but there will still be carbon sequestration benefits and certainly nature conservation benefits. And we're also contributing to the national, the UK Biodiversity Action Plan. So that's one site. And the other one we looked at was Pennycroft Park. There's an area of Pennycroft Park which, you know, potentially could be good for tree planting, or at least we thought. But then I consulted Environmental Health because I'd become aware that part of that site was on a former landfill, And indeed, Environmental Health told me that it was actually the area we were looking at was high risk. There was a gas-proof membrane to stop methane coming through. And if we were considering to plant trees on that particular site, we'd need to go and get, you know, a consultancy report done by a contaminated land specialist. So again, that's another site which was a good, potentially a good tree planting site, we thought, that we won't be able to plant on. Might be suitable for a wildflower meadow, which would be beneficial from a nature recovery point of view. But that's our two prime sites for planting trees on. We can't because of the constraints. And nearly every site you look at in an urban area has got some form of constraint on it. A really common one is a sense of safety. People, you know, they don't feel quite so safe and secure if they hear the tree planting's coming along because it gets in the way of sight lines and that kind of thing. So just a few examples there that demonstrate how difficult it is to actually find a site to plant trees on.
Yes, Councillor Allen, please.
When did you get that report back about Pennycroft Park? Say it's not a suitable site to plant trees. Is that what it's essentially concluded?
Just an inquiry to Environmental Health, because somebody told me it was former landfill, so I thought, well, I better check, you know, whether or not there's a gas-proof membrane underneath it.
So you still plan to plant trees on it, though?
No. We were just scoping sites out, but the suitable solution, from our perspective, if it was agreeable going forward, because something probably hasn't been put forward to councillors yet, would be to turn it into a wildflower meadow. You know, the best places for doing these kinds of things are either on low quality agricultural land or amenity grassland that's not particularly widely used.
Yeah, I'll just jump in there as well. One of the things that my officers often hear me say is, why are we cutting grass for cutting grass's sake? And one of the things that we want to look at going forward is, can we relax our mowing regimes and can we put in more wildflower meadows so that there are different visual aspects to our parks and open spaces? We've used the term in open spaces green deserts for a while now. And that's simply because the traditional Victorian approach to maintaining parks and open spaces, that they have to have grass, devoid of anything else. What we want to try and do, and this won't come quickly, and it will take time, is to try and make them more visually interesting, but also be able to increase biodiversity and encourage more and more nature. And there will be things that will be changing for what people consider to be a traditional park and how that looks. And there'll be some challenges for yourselves as councillors, as people start to question what is happening on our parks.
Thank you, Mike. We all have a challenge, don't we, people? We do, yes. Yes.
I was going to say that's going to be a challenge in itself, because people have got one perspective and they don't like change. And to change for the better is going to take some hard work. So, good luck.
Yes, Councillor Nick. Microphone, please, Nick.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I'm not used to it. I'll say that we paid too much accord to public views. That might sound insulting, but I think most people don't have in their educational kit bag a degree of appreciation of just how complex nature's response to human invasion is, and that by the debate of committees like this, we should get nearer to the truth than just, you know, paying lip service or whatever. You know, the government is way behind, and the further you go, not an insult, but the further you go up the tree, the further behind you get. And that there are individuals around who have been on this for many years. I claim a little in that direction. I mean, the first time I studied the effects of carbon on the atmosphere was by Russian academicians who wrote a paper questioning whether or not this interaction could occur. This was back in, you know, the very early 70s, late 60s. Then it transgressed through global warming and global cooling. There was a real strong element that thought that they were on the verge of the next ice age because of the involvement of carbon in the atmosphere. 25 years ago, my children went to William Shrewsbury. They complained bitterly when I turned up with 300
oak saplings from Clumber Park that the kids had grown in their own back garden, and they said, yes, we'll take them on and grow them further. They didn't know that was talking about 300, so this whole area was covered in plant pots with saplings in it. Now, I don't know what happened to them and what have you, because we left soon after that and went to France for a decade. But that it brings me to schools. Schools have open spaces, and every school should have a gardening club, and that gardening club should include education with regard to, you know, what is coming and what have you. I mean, I've spoken before about whether or not natural species are any good to us, because the climate now is not going to be the climate in 60, 70 years' time when the trees are at full maturity. You know, I come from France, and they grow olive trees there. You know, in my locality, it was all about walnuts. But these are 2 degrees higher on average than the temperature here. So are they a part of the answer? Eventually, it'll move past those, and they'll be no good, because we're not going to change this anytime soon. So, you know, this council declared an emergency, a crisis. That is a pretty strong assessment, and we need to respond to that, not think of it, well, we've had a crisis for the last 4 or 5 years. Nothing's happened, has it? Well, there's been a few storms. No, it's the long-term erosion, and the long-term is getting shorter and shorter. So, there we go.
Thank you, Mick. Can I just say that... I put three oaks in my front garden 30 years ago. They're okay. They're still there. They're looking healthy. They're really good. So I would like us to plant more oak trees if possible, because I'm thinking, from what I know, these are the premier species, aren't they? There's a lot more biodiversity from an oak tree. And yes, I get it. The best time to plant an oak tree was 100 years ago, wasn't it? But I mean, hey, let's start now. And let's look to the future. I'm sure we're all interested, aren't we, in looking to the future. The going back to the National Forest presentation the Planning Committee had, I will send you the link to it, Mark, and the details. I'm sorry, I'm not clever enough to do it now, but I will do it. And that was very interesting. There's obviously a good resource there that I think, I know the National Forest only covers Burton and not most of East Staffordshire, but I think if they've got any expertise or any wisdom, we should use them and get their advice if we can about that. And otherwise, what else was I going to ask you about? Changing tree species, land finite. A while ago, Paul was kind enough to go around Horninglow with me, and we found a site, didn't we, for a community orchard. If everyone knows, we've done a letter drop, haven't we, Adrian? We've told people in the locality, we've asked their opinions. We haven't got many replies back, but we haven't had anything negative. And so, how do I make it a reality?
Well, actually, you can apply as a parish council.
Yeah.
And they've got a campaign for developing community orchards, which we've had 2 or 3 of them, successful bids. So if you contact, I'll look up the name of the person.
Yeah.
But if you apply, you can get three fruit trees. So that's basically the simple way of moving forward to it.
Okay, thank you. I must admit, the parish council were supportive. They passed a motion in favour of it, but they're anxious not to be landed with, as you know, with the maintenance of the trees. I don't think there's a big issue particularly, but it's on ESBC land, isn't it? It's the land reserve. So yeah. So thank you. Send me details, please, Paul. That'd be great. Free fruit trees from the National Forest Council, you say?
Yeah. National
Forest Company. National Forest Company, I'm knocking that down before I forget. And otherwise, I think that's been very interesting. I think you've covered everything I was going to ask you. National Forest. Oh, yeah, again, the National Forest had a great ethos in about planting trees in. This goes on to planning, perhaps, and I think, and as people will know, I think planning has got a massive impact on climate change. Tree lined streets, wooden street furniture, wooden play equipment. I liked the bit where they said they wanted to have a greater use of wood in building materials. You know what I mean? Just to make a character for the area. And again, that's something else, perhaps, with the tree planting. We might think about it. They weren't quite so forthcoming on making trees a commercial resource in the area. But I think, if we project far enough in the future, perhaps maybe that's something that we ought to perhaps think about. I don't know, but. Right. Any more questions for anybody else? Yes, sorry, Councillor Holton, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Just want to say the name, the contact details for the National Forest was Philip Metcalf there.
Oh, brilliant.
On 01283 551211. And just to remind Chair that we are meeting with the National Forest next week.
Yes.
You and I.
Indeed we are.
With the community lead.
Yeah.
So lots hopefully to feed back to the committee once we've met following that presentation. I actually wanted to ask a little bit more on the Go Garden project, the community project in Uttoxeter, and how that started, the attendance, how the community is getting involved, and what can we learn from that. Thank you.
The Go Garden project started about 2016, something like that. What had happened basically was that the leisure centre in Uttoxeter had had a lot of development work, and there was a certain amount of money left from the development to improve the grounds. And there's have you been there? Oh well, we can organise a trip. You can come over and have a look. But basically, there's a huge ground there. So before I started the job, we've had the Greenhouse Centre in State North Cemetery. That's been going for probably 25 years or so. And we wanted to set up a centre in Uttoxeter so we could work like we do in Burton and have volunteers come and etc. So basically, we had some money. We were quite lucky, weren't we, at the time? And we set that up. So we've got two huge polytunnels there and a lot of ground. It started off basically as a kind of thing to support Uttoxeter in Bloom and Uttoxeter Town Council with all their community projects, which he still does. But what we're looking at now, in light of what we're trying to develop, tree nurseries, etc., is actually combining all our efforts with the site in Burton and the State North Cemetery and that. So rather than running them as two separate projects, we've got the site in Burton where we've got heated greenhouses so we can grow delicate things. But we've got no heat at the Go Garden, so we're going to use that for more hardier crops such as trees, shrubs, etc. So rather than that just feeding Uttoxeter and the greenhouse feeding Burton, they'll both be feeding the whole borough, if you know what I mean, but they'll both have the various strengths. And on both sites we are working a lot with people with health problems. So we do therapeutic gardening. We're also very involved with social prescribing with the NHS. So people who've got serious health problems come to us. They help us grow these plants, they do the gardening, and they then get, obviously, major health benefits. So that's in a nutshell. I could talk for about an hour, but I won't. If any of the councillors, anybody in the council wants to come, then we're more than happy to. We're always open. We're always there to show people. You know what I mean? So
thank you for that invite. That would be fantastic. And the community groups you're working with in Uttoxeter, does that include, you know, and you don't have to answer this now, the Renee Church and Heath Community Centre? We had the privilege of visiting both a couple of weeks back.
We don't work with Heath Community Centre, no. Because Heath Community Centre wouldn't want to work with us because they are completely individual. They've got their own kind of, their own world.
Okay.
With Heath Community Centre, we converted some of the land from the park, with the exception that fenced off used to be part of the park, and that's the agreement. So they've got that fantastic garden there now. Yeah. So it's better use of land. Comes back to my original point, why are we just cutting grass to grass? But actually, you can make better use of it through communities. Okay. And Heath Community Centre is a really good example of that.
But they are very much running it themselves, so
yeah.
We don't not work with them, but we don't work with them, if you know what I mean, because they've got their own project. We've actually, in the last few months, we've been lucky to get two new members of staff, two officers to help run these projects. We had one previously, and she was kind of jumping between each one. So this will be the first year, the first proper growing year, that we'll be able to really have both staff working on a rota, so we'll be in Uttoxeter a lot more than we were. So all those groups that are in there, with the social prescribed, the churches, etc., we're actually working with the local churches because they're donating trees for the park in Framshill. So what we're hoping this year is that we'll massively increase the amount of various community groups in Uttoxeter that we're working with. But this is like a good year for us because the two new offices only started towards the end of last year when it came kind of to the end of the season, you know, so this should be a really good year.
We look forward to the visit.
Mm.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry, Councillor Ashcroft. Mick.
Right.
Microphone, Mick.
We're a scrutiny committee, so I guess we look at what policies have been displayed in front of us by the executive, but I guess we're also able to question past policies and what have you. So if I was to look at ID Verd and compare it to your enthusiasm and think in terms of ID Verd is £1 million contract that we have, how did the first question is how did that develop that way, and why not have developed our own horticultural park ranger gardening team and what have you? Because it does seem to me that wherever I bump into ID Verd, I'm not in one moment criticising the efforts that the guys put in, but I sometimes wonder about the skills or the qualifications they have or the understanding of where we might want to go in the future. So that area seems to me to be worth one of analysis, vis-à-vis the climate change and the effects it'll make to the horticultural sort of part of our communities and what have you. So is there an answer to that in 30 seconds?
I think ID Verd will play a really key role as they're our contracted provider. They've supported us with different regimes that we've had in place with them. The contract, it's always been an outsourced contracted service since about 2006. Not sure it's always been ID Verd across that time. But in terms of their skill base, back this up, their actual horticultural team are incredibly passionate and incredibly skilled as well. They, to quote Paul, sometimes lose sleep over the fact that with the way that we've put in our horticultural displays together. They take great pride in that. The other aspect of the grounds maintenance contract is there are low-skilled jobs involved within, which is to pick in and bin empty, and it's a consequence of the service that ID Verd provide. I would also add they are currently working on a piece of work for us to look at alternatives to glyphosate. One of the challenges I've put forward to them is that they're a national, in fact they're an international company because they originally started in France. With their expertise, what are the other options for glyphosate that will actually can be dealt with? And they've produced a little paper. At the minute it hasn't got any cost associated with it. But for example, in Fulham they're using something called a hot foam, which deals with weeds in a better way and in a safer way. It's more costly, it's not as easy to use, but they are looking at the different options. So my challenge is always with ID Verd. As you've got that wider footprint, what skills, knowledge and expertise do you bring to e-staff that can help us with a contract? And glyphosate is one example of that. So they have got passion, they've got skills that we can use and bring to bear for the better of e-staff.
Can I just expand on what you just said there? Just to expand on Mike, because I deal with practical stuff that, you know, I'm not involved in policies and things, I just do the gardening. But the ID Verd only have 4 horticultural staff. And what I mean by that is there are 4 of them that do the floral work. So all the traffic islands that you see planted out with bedding plants, the staple gardens, all the other stuff across Burton, you talk to, there are 4. And I can say as a lifelong RHS horticulturalist that they are very good quality lads. And they're all qualified, these 4 lads. And they do, as Mike said, loosely. When we enter Burton into the In Bloom, it is very stressful for everybody because, you know, there's a lot at stake. And these lads work to an extremely high standard, to the point where we were the 3rd highest scoring entry in Britain In Bloom across the whole of the Midlands last year. So I'm not talking about the whole company of ID Verd, but the team that I work with are exceptionally good, and I would back them to the hilt.
Thank you. Councillor Ashcroft, please.
Yeah, I was just going to pick up on the Staples Hill Cemetery and the Go Garden. All I can say to councillors is you need to go and spend time with these guys. I've spent hours in both the cemetery and in the Go Garden, and the only way to understand the amount of effort and time and hard work that goes in is to actually go along and spend some time. So I suggest, if you've got some free time, when they're asking for volunteers, go out and see what they actually do. It'd be useful.
Thank you. Any more questions, people? Any more? Anything else? Anyone want to say anything else?
Chair, just to add, yes, if you are coming along, be prepared to get your hands dirty.
Thank you. Yes, well, I mean, my hands are always dirty. Thank you. Well, yeah, in a nice way. Yeah, thank you. Sorry, James.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. So I just wondered if there was a couple of, you know, actions falling out of that conversation, really. So I know there's been a couple of things. So an invite to the Go Guard, and potentially we could maybe utilise the member briefing to push out an invite or a little bit of information around the Go Guard, and along with that invite, and potentially that information you mentioned around the opportunities for the community orchards, where if there's things that are available to members in their sort of daily business, if you like, maybe we could utilise again the member briefing to push some of that information out, and hopefully get some nice outcomes from this really, really in-depth conversation that we've had today.
Thank you. Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very good, James. Thank you.
I'm glad you said that. I keep saying, mentioning the In Bloom, but it is important because it's an important thing for the council. But Burton is actually in the national finals this year for the second time in 2 years. So what we are looking for now are volunteers to actually come out over the next few months, help us plant trees. We've got a big project, all the planters in Station Street, which were originally planted by County Council when we ended up inheriting them a couple of years ago. We're now replanting and redesigning all those. We've got volunteers from McDonald's who are helping us do it. We've got a group of volunteers from the Greenhouse. So any councillors that would like to come along, you're more than welcome, and we'd be very pleased to have you come and help us do that planting. So all you've got to do, any of you, is just contact me. You've all got my email and phone number, so just contact me and we can arrange something, no problem.
Lovely, thank you. Oh, sorry, Kim, can I beg your pardon, Kim?
Try and get some local businesses to with the planting in Station Street. Do you want some local business?
Sorry, I'm hogging it, sorry. Yes.
Okay.
We already do. I mean, what happened? We started a project, and it was literally the month before COVID lockdown, and we started a project called Forest, and the Forest stands for Friends of Renewing East Staffordshire Trees. It was a stroke of genius on our part, wasn't it? Absolutely. But it's really sad because we actually had a fantastic initial planting near St Peter's Church, where we've created an arboretum. And that took on a whole new life because over COVID, lots of people started offering them as memorial trees. So that was a really good start to it. The actual volunteers, unfortunately, died off a little bit because of the lockdowns and everything else. But going back to your question, in the last 18 months or so, we've worked with a number of local companies, Ulstrom Engineering, who are based in Barton, McDonald's, as a solicitor, I can't think of the name, Molson Coors, various people, and they have corporate responsibility sort of days where they'll send a team of people out. So we've been doing that for many years, and that's really picking up space again. So the whole thing is we want to get as many people from the community as we can involved in all this, because it's all about community pride then as well, isn't it?
There's lots of businesses down Station Street, isn't there, that might want to get involved in. You know, when they've got their own little pot, then they want to make it better than someone else's, don't they?
Yeah.
So you'll probably see that. But I'd just like to say, as well, we've got the community orchard in Winston, haven't we? And people didn't really know that it was there, so they thought they were stealing the apples. So they were going, oh, I've got these from up there. And I said, it is a community orchard. And obviously, with the community orchards, if we can get some of them here and there, it does help with the cost of living as well, because it's fresh food and stuff. So that's been quite well used, with the apples and stuff from that. And so that works really well.
Yeah, just to build on that, for the things trying to do with the county council this year is to look at their project for health, where we do have community orchards and food that's grown. So actively we can encourage people, no matter how big or small their plots are, to grow fruit, vegetables, and essentially free nutritional meals that have been grown in your own backyard. So we're hoping to really put that off this year, really.
Again, that's obviously we've got the allotment beds at the back of the centre, and what we don't use for the lunchroom and stuff, we give that out into the community, and you know, people really appreciate that. And you know, we've grown some things that people don't even know what they are, you know, and you go, oh, that's a butternut squash. You know, so it's nice to sort of get people to make something out of something that they've never tried before. So, yeah, they go really well as well, the allotment then.
Councillor Huckabee.
Yeah, coming back down to the grassroots sort of thing. I mean, I sit on the planning committee, so we get approvals. We're involved in approvals, certain new projects and what have you. I feel there's not enough emphasis being placed on guidance, probably you call it, to individuals who want to develop stuff and what have you. That if a tree's in the way, then you know it's of no consequence. Chop it down. Now, you know, you might call me a tree hugger or whatever. I don't know. You know, the ants I think are real. Should planning applications be guided to the point where they work round existing trees rather than the trees being in the way? Now, recently we destroyed a picnic area, or we allowed for a picnic area to be destroyed just up from the leisure centre. Looking at what was chopped down, I think there would probably be about 55 mature trees. There were a lot more that weren't of that nature, but combined together, you could have said that equals, you know, a mature tree. And I thought 55 of them. Now, when there was an examination or a question asked as to why that had happened, because our policy is that picnic areas need to be protected by leaf cover because of the increase in the solar glare and stuff like that, the answer was given that it was because they got some work to do on the electrics. Now, visiting the site and looking for where electrics would run, it would have meant that there was some electric supply underneath the Trent Bridge. Now, I can't believe and couldn't find any electric supply. What I did find was a electric bunker up against the beginning of the buildings in next to the dog. Next to the dog, is it the dog? No, not the dog. The pub down just off the Trent Bridge. And so, you know, it would seem to me that no consideration was given and that planning was approved, even with the loss of these trees. Now people will say, oh, we're going to plant, you know, millions. Well, we're not planting millions. We're not compensating. What we're doing is replacing stuff that's been missing for generations, attempting to deal with carbon. So, you know, my proposal would be, if we make proposals, is that greater emphasis should be played on the guidance given to planning by the planning department to new developments that work round what exists, not disregard what exists, even though they might say, well, we're going to plant trees there. You know, the latest assessment in America, and there's areas there where are further in front than we are, suggest that for every mature tree dropped, you have to plant 40 of some sort of sapling or whatever to replace them, to even begin to replace the carbon sequestration that happens, and the oxygen production as well. So, you know, am I right in thinking that the guidance is wrong? I don't know. Am I thinking that it's not strong enough, given the degeneration of the climate as it goes along? I don't know.
Thank you.
Chair, if I may, I think that's a question for planning colleagues rather than us.
Well yes, I think you're right. I think there's something we have to do as a planning committee. Well, I mean, again, planning, of course, we have to take all applications on the presentation we're given. We have to be unbiased. We can't have agendas beforehand. But for me, we are touching the boundaries of it here, aren't we, really? And certainly, if there's a new local plan being written, then maybe all of us, all councillors in this room, can sort of suggest input into that, perhaps, to make this kind of guidance a bit stronger, a bit firmer, and to do it. And certainly, use the expertise in front of us here. You know, people need to ask, definitely know more about trees than we do.
together.
Can I follow up with a general question then? That we sit as a scrutiny committee. We're independent of the parties we represent, and I attempt to be that. And any criticisms I make as a scrutineer, they'll have to take on the chin if it's against people deriving policy and whatever. The same for anybody else.
Yes. But as Mark says, the planning issue isn't the main as such, is it? But certainly the expertise that guy here, we can use.
The question is, how much does the executive take of whatever discussions take place in these scrutiny committees?
This is our role, isn't it? Our role is to ask the right questions and to give clear reports when required. Right.
Am I within my rights then to demand that somebody from planning comes to one of these scrutiny meetings and answers the question I just asked?
We can certainly ask him, can't we? I can't see why we can't ask him, James. Is there any reason why we can't ask him?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of ways of approaching the query that's been raised, but, you know, we can certainly either, you know, take away a question from this meeting this evening to push to the correct people for a response if there's a specific question that we want to ask.
Yeah.
These considerations might feed into a future piece of work that this committee wants to do more widely on you know, planning issues or whatever it might be. Or, as you can see from the agendas when they go out, there's an opportunity for questions to the officers or members of the council. So you could also submit a question through the committee and invite somebody to one of these forums to discuss things more broadly. So there are a number of ways of dealing with it. And as we've mentioned in previous committees as well, if there are opportunities to contact the cabinet members directly anyway, but, you know, to keep it within the scrutiny realms, there's a number of approaches. So it's entirely up to you as members as to how you want to play from there.
Forgive me. Sorry, was it Councillor Ashcroft? Did you have a hand up? No? Somebody over there? No? Oh, it is you.
What I was going to say has already been answered by Dan and yourself, Chair, actually, but perhaps more diplomatically, the question that Councillor Huckabee asked is already in the constitution. You can ask the senior member, either cabinet member or the senior manager or the head of service, to come to the scrutiny committee 3 days' notice, or you can ask the question on the scrutiny agenda. I will just say mention about planning. If it's guidance that we're after and strengthening that guidance, that won't really be taken in the way that you expect it to be, because developers will say, well, it's only guidance, thanks very much, and you can't refuse the application because it's only guidance that you're issuing. You need to change your policy, which I think is what the Chair said. Now, on trees, you mentioned not cutting trees down and building around them instead. There's a conflict straight away. Residents don't want more development in the countryside, and so if you ask a developer to build around trees instead of cutting them down, you have to accept that you're going to encroach more into the countryside, because the house numbers are still there to be built, still expected to be built, and the government of any colour, this is not a political point at all, a government of any point of any colour will want more houses to be built, because whilst houses aren't being built, house prices are going up and become more unreachable for people trying to get on the ladder. So there's a very clear conflict in my mind around protecting the environment and then building houses sustainably. But there is more that can be done, and I think a local plan review will get us there. It's an awful lot of work, though, and a lot of engagement from members needs to happen as well.
Yeah, thank you, Councillor. My opinion is that it's all things are political. I think it is a conflict, certainly, but it's something we should be able to get the better of, I think, you know, in due course. Yeah? Any more questions? Go on.
What I'm asking for is know what to do about the way that it's unfolding, climate change.
Mark, wait a minute.
Yeah, the way it's evolving. At one point, the council placed a crisis. Now, to use that word just glibly or to let it die away and whatever you are, it's not good enough for me. I want to feel a response, even if it's only to hear somebody say, shut up, will you? You know, I want a response. I want to see some actual movement towards the crisis. And at the moment, I get the feeling that really, you know, house builders and whatever, it won't happen in our lifetime, so we don't really need to bother. That's not all of them, of course. But there is a certain sentiment there of a lack of realisation of just what is unfolding in front of us.
Yeah, I share your frustration, Nick. I think you're asking the right questions, and we've got to get better at asking those questions, haven't we, and getting the responses that we think we should have.
It's unfortunate if I ask it the wrong way, but
No. We're happy for you. Sorry, Councillor Anne.
Well, I'm not going to tell you to shut up, Nick. But you asked for examples of or action to be made. Jeff sitting next to you is an action that's been made because when we declared the climate emergency, it came with revenue bid to recruit a climate change officer, and that was Jeff, and then that was a couple of years, 3 years ago, I think. And then just last year, there's more growth in the budget to recruited another member of staff, and their work that they produced, the Green New Deal, and a lot of actions in there that have been in train for a long time. So there is stuff happening. I think it would help the committee, and certainly Councillor Huckabee might have some questions answered if we ask the cabinet member responsible for climate change, who I have no idea who it is, and the head of service and the senior management. Senior manager as well, to come and answer questions on climate change, and then of course it might be a different question to planning as well.
Microphone, Mick. We're finished. Right, thank you. Thank you. Very interesting, as always, gentlemen. Thank you very much indeed. I think you've given us a good idea of how complex this issue is, and you've certainly given us an example of your enthusiasm. So, you know, can I say the future is trees? The future is trees, isn't it? It is, yeah. Oh, what? So sorry. One last point. The gentleman from the National Forest told us that the best way to keep trees in the community is not chop them down. So that's something we can perhaps all work on and think of a way of going around that. But thank you very much. I will send you the link to the National Forest presentation, Mark, and the details that Monica's given you again. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'll get water. Look, pure gym. Thank you. Right. Anything else? Lovely. Thank you, gentlemen. You're welcome to stop if you wish to, or you're welcome if you've got to get off. That's fine. Thanks so much indeed. Thank you. Right, well, that just let the gentleman escape from the room, and then we'll go on to... where are we? Item 8, scrutiny review programme update. If James can provide us with an update, please. There you go, my name is James.
Thanks, Chair. So, I suppose just to start off with, for the avoidance of doubt and the benefit of the minutes, etc., was there an agreement there that there's an action in terms of climate change and planning off the back of the conversation we've just had?
Yes, I think there was, wasn't there? Yes, people, yeah? Say yes. What it is an action for us to do climate change and planning. I mean, for me, of course there is, but I mean, is everyone happy with that? We ask a question specifically the planning officers. Microphone again, Mick.
In the election manifesto of the current administration, there was something about moving to passive house, and I don't know whether that's resulted in planning changing and what have you, but passive house only deals with the control of heat loss. It doesn't deal with the carbon generation of preparing that heat to control the heat loss. That would be, I think it's BREEAM, which is a standard that's already adopted, but I don't know to what degree every developer adopts that standard.
I'm sure we could add that question into one of the questions, but will we, forgive me, James, were we talking more about in relation to trees, weren't we? Was that what you were
thinking? No, it was up to the committee as to what they want, I suppose, is there a desire then, I suppose, for a... attendance at a future meeting to discuss these things, or have a presentation, ask a few questions.
I think that would be a good idea. Sorry, Councillor Gould.
It might be a good start if Councillor can actually put together his questions, and then we can see who we need to bring in and what we want to discuss going forward. Because it's all very well and good getting somebody in, but if you don't know what they're going to be answering, they can't prepare anything. So I think if you put your questions forward first, and then we can see who we bring in.
That'll be good,
Thanks, that'll be really appreciated, and we can take it from there then. So really, I was just wanting to provide an update as to where we are with the, you know, we've discussed a number of things throughout this committee over the past few meetings as to where we are with the programme. I think what members had agreed to do previously was to have essentially a presentation and discussion at each of the scheduled meetings, as well as having an ongoing review in place. So as you know, at the last meeting we had a really good discussion around the Climate Change Action Plan. We had colleagues there in attendance to discuss and, you know, answer any questions that we had on that. Of course, we just had the discussion a moment ago on the tree planting in the borough as the focal point, if you like, for this evening's meeting. And then in a similar manner, we're working to arrange a presentation from the relevant people for the next scheduled meeting of the committee to talk about sewage and flooding types of issues that we spoke about at the last meeting or two. And they're all items that we'd, you know, highlight at the outset as being items of interest to us, you know, subject areas of interest. As I mentioned, we also agreed that we would undertake an ongoing review. And this was agreed as looking into engagement mechanisms in relation to climate change. So since the last meeting, we've worked on a scope for that review, and the subgroup leading that work have met to progress things and take that forward. So there's a draft report in play at the moment, really a working document, along with a range of supplementary information regarding the council's existing climate change communications and engagement plans. So that's been circulated for the subgroup to consider ahead of a follow-up session, which is at the moment scheduled for next week. And there's been a little bit of feedback around the date and time. So I think if members are okay to just hang back at the end of the meeting just to confirm a time and date, that'd be really helpful. So that's Councillors Gould, Ashcroft, Holton, Slater and Smith on the subgroup. If we can just get a date in the diary, I can then go away and talk to the relevant office to make sure their availability is there as well, and we'll take that forward in the working document. The working report will then grow from there. So been a bit of progress really since the last session. But yeah, of course, if any members of the subgroup want to add to that, then do feel free. Back to you, Chair.
Yeah, fine. I've got nothing else to say on that. Any questions about that? Anybody? Anything to say? Monica, yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Yeah, just to add again, we also sit on the planning committee along with Councillor Ashcroft and Uckby and the Chair. And the National Forest did indeed do a presentation, and from that I raised questions about their community engagement, and had a follow-up email from Jill Forrester with an invite to meet with them about their community engagement programme. I've also sort of in another capacity and another role within the community met with two local schools who are doing some fantastic things around climate change and environment, which is Burton Fields on Outwood Street and the Grange Junior School, who have just developed their forestry using a piece of land in the back of their school. So happy really to report back on the fact that they're doing that and how we learn as a committee to roll that out. Hence my question about the Utoxeter programme, the leisure centre there, and how we can get all the schools and the community. I think initially we spoke about including the parish councils as well and getting them on board, but I can hear I'm quite excited about the prospect of what they're developing with regards to orchards, etc. So yeah, that's what we've done as a subcommittee, part we've played in doing that, and our feedback meeting with Jill Forrester.
Yeah, thank you.
I think we're meeting on Tuesday, 16th.
Yes, you told me. Next Tuesday. Great. Lovely. Thank you, Monica. Anything else? Yeah.
That's great. So welcome the feedback into the next group, and then we'll report back to the next meeting as well. Worth saying as well that it's the climate change adaptation team will be in attendance at this discussion that we're going to be having next week, or whenever that date is agreed. So we'll have officers there working on this that, you know, will be able to answer questions as well. Hopefully have a really, you know, really, you know, full discussion to be able to build that rapport.
Thank you. Right. Okie dokie. Any more? No? Right. Okay. In that case, then on to item 9 now. Public executive decision records. A list of public executive decisions have been circulated with the agenda. Does anyone have any questions on any of these? You've all seen them. There's a big list. A big list. There's quite a lot. Yes, Councillor Huckabee, yes. Are you going to talk about the...
Yes.
Sustainability.
That it's something different. Now, the area that I'm concerned about is the description of what a winter climate in this country is going to be like. Now, what investigations I've done, and I'm no scientist, I'm no expert, but I can read, is there seems to be a sizable group of scientists who are examining the situation, is that the winters are going to be determined by the degree of runoff of fresh water from the Greenland ice sheet into ice shelf into the North Atlantic and its ability to drown out the Gulf Stream, either sink it or dilute it or drown it, whichever emotive word you want to use. And this is accelerating, the situation accelerating now. British winters have always been moderated by the Gulf Stream and the warm air above it. So it washes our shores coming over from the West Indies, somewhere around there and what have you, and it ends up as washing the shores of our western areas and the air above. Now, the air above is important because it holds back, acts as a buffer against the Siberian cold air trying to work its way westward. So if it is true, or it does reach a point of dilution, if the Gulf Stream is being suppressed in any particular way, then that means that the winters that we're going to experience are going to be remarkably colder than what we seem to be expecting. Now, the last few years we've had these beasts from the east, and that is exactly what a cold stream of air coming from Siberia could be described as. Now, the frequency of these blasts, if the Gulf Stream degenerates further, will increase. We're going through a cold area at the moment. Now, I know that climatic-wise, it can depend on a lot of intermeshing things, like this cold spell we're going to get next week is dependent on the fact that we have high pressure located over the British Isles, and it's drawing it in. But the Staffordshire Sustainability Board's document doesn't describe this at all. It describes something else. Now, the implications of this for the new administration that came in concerns the insulation of houses against this. Now, I live in 165 All Saints Road, which is single brick, and we've had a leak from a downpipe into one of the front areas of the wall and what have you. It seeped through into the front room, and now we've got black fungi growing and what have you. But the cold comes in direct. There's no insulation on the inside. There's no insulation on the outside. Now, this administration has, in its election manifesto, quantified that there is a need. But the need is huge, because there's something like 8,000 similar houses in Burton, and they're all mostly in deprived areas. And, you know, the corporate plan for next year didn't involve deprivation or deprived areas at all. So if the Sustainability Board's document is correct, then all of what I said is a load of bull. But if it's wrong, then we have a situation where we're going to, if we want to preserve life, because cold, this is where it attacks the infirm, the old and the aged and what have you, then we have to prepare budgets that take into account the crisis that is going to be insulation of a good substantial amount of our housing stock in deprived areas. And don't forget, those deprived areas, deprivation comes in several forms. It's not just one thing about wealth, it's about a lot of other issues as well, all combining in one area, a perfect storm, you might say, with regard to environmental conditions.
Yeah, thank you, mate. That's great.
So, but this is my comment to this Sustainability Board document, that I don't think it's up to date. I don't think it catches the changes that are taking place, and I would look for that to be analysed, and either tell me that I'm wrong, tell the people who are scientists who are looking at this that they're wrong, and plough ahead with what they believe to be the course of climate change in the next few years.
Thank you, Mick. I think I'm right in saying that the sort of cabinet leave for climate change and environment is on this, attends these meetings, as does one of the officers from the council. I'm sorry, I can't. Is it Tom Deary now?
Tom Deary, yeah. I mean, the point of the sustainability, the importance of the sustainability, Staffordshire sustainability, is that if you're dealing with carbon control, right, if somebody is not bothering next door, there's not a wall there that stops his carbon from flowing into yours because you've reduced yours to zero. So the commonality of the problem occupies a huge space, far greater than just East Staffordshire, which I think Staffordshire understood why they formed this, why they formed the Sustainability Board. But it does mean that if we are part of this group, and we need to be part of this group, then we need to ensure that what their diagnosis of the problems is correct, or as good a guess as we possibly make at this point in time. Of course, it might degenerate even further, but all we have is the evidence there. Now, is the evidence being reviewed? Is it being weighted? Is the risk of it going in this way or that way, you know, the best balance, et cetera, et cetera? There's, you know, again, it's a complex issue. But I don't think, as it stands, it answers any challenges against what they conceived it to be. I'm presenting one that their idea of what winters are going to be in East Staffordshire is wrong.
So, in responding to this EDR, then should this committee write to the cabinet member and the lead officer, suggesting that they look at this more closely, and that the SSB board strategy isn't, in our view, strong enough? Is that what we're saying?
I don't think it's correct.
Not correct, yeah. Okay, anybody else want to say anything about that? Do we need to vote on this? Shall we vote to say that we'll send something to the member, cabinet member and the lead officer about that, to this effect?
Well, I guess it's, they're not recognised, the executive works on the basis of work ordered by it from the officers. The officers are, I'm not saying East Staff's on this because it's a more local thing, but I'm not sure about the origination of where these ideas come from. Are they dictated from the courts or the documents?
Well, certainly a question we can ask into.
The dictates from the court are concerned, they're probably 10 or 50 years out of date. And there is huge political
Anybody else want to say? Yes, Councillor Ashburn.
That's just like Councillor Gould suggested earlier, a list of questions is sent, maybe, as opposed to criticising what they're doing. Ask the questions and get some information back before you make that decision.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the SSB board, as you say, is a county-wide thing, isn't it? So for all we know, maybe locally we've already asked these questions. I don't know, but if we haven't, then they should be asked, shouldn't they? Send some questions, Mick, and then we'll send it off. If anyone's agree with that, then we'll send it off to the relevant personnel. Thank you. Right. Any other EDRs we'd like to talk about? Anybody? Anybody else about all the others? There was what was there? There was quite a few on there. Oh, crikey! There was. What was there? There was SSB adaption strategy, there was Ralston allotments, car parking charges over Christmas, well, it's been and gone now, isn't it? There was the ECO4 and GBIS strategy agreement. Yeah, I remember that. Energy company obligations and. Hang on, I wrote it down here somewhere. Great British installation scheme. There was a dispute about a decarbonisation consultancy, wasn't there? Getting someone into the council buildings to check all the buildings out to make sure that how we go about decarbonising better. There was appointment to outside bodies, and I think that was it, wasn't it? Yeah, quite a few decisions there to sort of scrutinise if we want to. But has anyone got anything to say about any of those? No? No? Happy? No? Lovely. Thank you. Okie dokie. All right. Item 10. Crikey. Date of the next meeting, it says. 27th of March 2024. Now that's the point. It was the 3rd of April, wasn't it? We've changed it. We have changed it, obviously. Because people will have the 3rd of April in their diaries. I had. It's got 27th of March down here, and it's on the little briefing notes.
Cool.
It's the 3rd of April. There you go. It's not 27th. Is it? Oh, is it 27th of March there? Look. Actual agenda. So sorry. Too many agendas. Right, 3rd of April. As you were, people. 3rd of April. Brilliant. That's better. Right. 3rd of April seems to be better as well. Item 11. Corporate Plan Report, Quarter 2. I now invite James to provide a performance report of the Corporate Plan for Quarter 2. Please note that Appendix 2 and 3 will be considered in private parties meeting, so if councillors have any points to discuss on these sections, please raise them in the private parties meeting at Item 12. Thank you, James.
Yeah, thanks, Jez. So, as you've said, it's the Quarter 2 performance report looking at the progress towards achieving the corporate plan priorities up to the end of September this year, or of last year, along with the latest updates on the leisure contract as well as the Townsform programme. But really just looking at the corporate plan, we've graded things in the usual ways and the usual standard traffic light star system of ratings. But if we look at the live targets, this equates to the council being at 94.21% green overall, just 1.65% amber and just 4.13% red. And there's some further breakdown on that in the tables you can see on pages 6 and 7 of the main report. That shows how things break down across the priorities as well as the cabinet portfolios. And then there's some narrative you can see on pages 8 and 9 of the report around the red and amber targets there, just with some context around the situation with each of those indicators. And it's worth saying as well that Appendix 1 does provide comprehensive data on all the indicators across the corporate plan. But as you can see, the numbers suggest that the council continues to be in a good position in terms of its corporate performance. And the report also provides some information on the performance of the leisure operating contracts, as I've said. That's there in Section 6 of the report. But again, there's no issues being flagged there. Again, it looks very positive in terms of that. And similarly with the Townsform programme, which is there detailed in Section 7. So that's just a high-level summary of the report as a whole. As I've suggested, the numbers suggest we're in a good position across all three strands, but of course happy to take any questions away on any of those things.
Thank you. Any questions, people? No. Forgive me. I noticed there were two amber reports, weren't there, for residual household waste and waste recycling and composting, which are amber. And there was five red ones, of which the only climate change one was the car parking services. So, anyone got any questions about any of that stuff?
Yeah.
Microphone, Mick.
There ought to be a proximity sensor that hears your voice and then switches itself on. I don't know whether to raise this or not. Town funds programme. From my point of view, I'm an engineer used to working in thousands of inches and what have you, small interpretations or assumptions and what have you can end up being global disasters. The history of the town's funds, specifically the market hall and the removal of the library into it. Originally, it was adjudged by the town board, and one of the few things I probably agree with them on was that they saw the necessity to submit, along with the submission of monies, to enable that removal. There was an appreciation that there needed to be an improvement of the market hall. To that end, the financial component that they claimed, 7.3 million, contained an element for the market hall which would have seen to the improvement of it. And although the project failed, for whatever reason anybody wants to claim, the whole of that 7.3 was transferred from the market hall project, which I think was J, was it, into the High Street development, which was not at that point a town board project, but was separate to that, and it was renamed Project D because it encompassed the High Street linkages down below and whatever. That's fair enough. But in transferring all of the 7.3 million, what they did also was, it, within that 7.3 was the quantity for the improvement of the market hall, and that was moved across as well. Now, it might be argued, I don't think successfully in logic, that that improvement was not then required because the library was not moving to it. I would suggest that the improvement of the market hall, that improvement means the construction or the repair or the establishment of a building fit for the purpose of what it found, which was a heritage building. So the transfer of the 7.3 million denied the market hall, which had been good enough to provide its heritage status to the government who liked heritage status projects, enabled that 7.3 to be approved. So,
Nick, bless you. I get the point that we're supposed to scrutinise everything, or we can obviously look at anything, can't we? Is there a more climate perspective?
Well, the market hall is in need of restoration, in the sense of the roof is now failing. Yes. Hence the report that we've read and received. Yeah. Yeah. I know that's broken down into four different years of urgence.
Yeah. I mean, again, would it be a good idea to have these specific questions that we can send off again?
Yeah, but there has been conversation around that it places pressure on other budgets to be able to bring it into line. And the lack of, or that pressure, or the lack of resources directly to the market hall might well skew the views of how the market hall use is to be in the future.
Yeah.
So I just make the point, really, that technically there was money approved for the improvement of the market hall, but I think erroneously it was all transferred, all 7.3 was transferred into the High Street regeneration because that desperately needed money.
Okay.
But it still left the problem with the market hall, which I think had been covered originally. And this is in the town board minutes, so it's not something that...
Do you think this is a...
Well,
that's a good point, and you can raise it with the leader and anybody else. I don't think it's enough.
I
I think it might be better if these questions were perhaps in another committee.
Well, there is a report here, Town Board Fund Programme, and it says stuff in it, so I thought it at least an excuse to raise the point.
Yes. Thank you, Mick. Yes. Sorry, Councillor Arn.
Thanks, Chair. I'll assure Councillor Huckabee, there was nothing more that I would love than to get stuck into this debate right now. I think there's lots of things I could say at that point. But I have to say, there's a precedent, although not set out in the Constitution, that we stick to things that are to do with climate change and environment. And so I don't think that point's been demonstrated that there's a strong enough link. Happy to talk about it after the meeting, though, Councillor Hawkeley.
Okay, thank you. So, any more comments about the EDRs? Any others? No? Lovely, thank you. So, where are we now then? Are we now on to. Corporate plan, sorry, you don't tell me. Well, next one, 11. We have two items to consider in private, so I will now move that, in accordance with section 100 brackets A brackets 4 of the Local Government Act 1972, the press and public be excluded from the remainder of the meeting, as it is likely, in view of the nature of the business to be transacted or the nature of the proceedings, that there will be disclosed exempt information as defined in the paragraphs of part 1 of schedule 12A of the Act, indicated in brackets before each item number on the agenda. Do I have a seconder for that? Put down on somebody, please. Thank you very much, Councillor Gould. Thank you. We will now go to the vote. All those for this motion we just read out. Thank you. Lovely. I'll wait for members to leave the room and the recording can be turned off. There we go. We're no longer recorded.